Our first reading is from Jose Marti, a Cuban freedom hero. Cultivo una rosa blanca en julio como en enero para el amigo sincero que me da su mano franco y para el cruel que me arranca el corazón con que vivo. Cardo ni oruga, cultivo una rosa blanca. I have a white rose to tend in July as in January. I give it to the true friend who offers his frank hand to me, and to the cruel one who breaks the heart by which I live. Thistle nor thorn do I give. For him too, I have a white rose.
Another Voice by Pope Francis. A person who thinks only about building walls, wherever they may be, and not building bridges is not Christian. This is not the gospel. And the Christian reading is from Mark. Jesus also said, "The kingdom of God is as if someone would scatter seed on the ground and would sleep and rise night and day, and the seed would sprout and grow. She does not know how. The earth produces of itself first the stalk, then the head, then the full grain in the head. But when the grain is ripe, at once she goes in with the sickle, because the harvest has come."
Today is part one of our Cuba experience and share with you. We have so much to say. So many things happened on the trip. On August 14th, Janet Cruz, Michelle Greenwood, three youth, and I will have the opportunity to share a sermon on Cuba, taking a deeper look at the complicated politics, the culture shifts as we saw them, the relationships fostered, and what this might mean for us at Southminster. I encourage you to join us on August 14th. This trip was a little different, as you heard, than our last trip. For 5 days of it, we divided into four different groups and went to four different areas and stayed with Cuban people, living their lifestyle, experiencing their culture, and participating in church activities. We were really able to get to know the people so much better than perhaps we were last time. The churches were the Santa Clara Church, the Calvarine Church, the Posadas Church, and the Camawani Church. To each of the participants and to all of us, my greatest hope is that this trip and the whole experience has been a transformational one for you individually and for us collectively as a church. Let this not be the end, but just the beginning. The beginning of our building bridges with people in Cuba, the beginning of being the kingdom of God to each other and for each other. So with that, I invite the youth and adults to share some of their stories. We'll begin with Santa Clara.
Hi, my name is Michelle. We went to Santa Clara, a small group of us, four adults. Santa Clara is the provincial capital. It was the site of a major battle in the revolution, and that is still alive today in memorials to Che Guevara and in the memories of people. One of the church members shared her memory of hiding in the closet on one night when they were releasing prisoners from the jail down the street. The church there is a very small church. It has an aging membership. One of the reasons only four of us adults went there was they don't really have a youth program, and part of that may be because they share a pastor with two other churches and the pastor doesn't live in their town. In the absence of a pastor leading the church, the lay members have really stepped up, and we were able to share some of their service activities with them. We went on pastoral visits to shut-ins. They also run a laundry program for 26 people who are unable to do their own laundry, and we helped out with that one day. They are also in the midst of starting and implementing a daycare program for the elderly people in their church who who are often left home alone during the day while their family members work. And in Cuba, especially when we walked around Santa Clara, it's clear that if one is physically disabled, there are very few options for getting around, and you can truly be shut in if you live on the second story of a floor of a house, for example.
I loved Cuba and all things Cuban. The beautiful scenery, papaya and mangoes for breakfast every morning, the old cars, the beautiful historic buildings in old Havana, the music and the beach. But above all, I loved the people. What a privilege it was to hear their stories and learn about their lives. And I was greatly humbled by what I saw in the Cuban churches. Although they lack the material resources that we take for granted here at Southminster, they are truly blessed with spiritual gifts. And the members of the churches that we visited, their hearts are filled with faith and they celebrate God's presence in their lives. They have great hope for a better future for their families and their communities. But above all, they love one another, and they show tremendous concern and passion for their neighbors. It was awe-inspiring to see how much they can do with so little. They see a need and do not hesitate to find a way to address it with confidence and commitment. I will forever remember Mercedes, who does the laundry for the 26 senior members of her community on 2 times a week in a small facility at the church property, and the filtered water station, which is at the church in Havana, where all members of the neighborhood can come every afternoon with their jugs to take home safe drinking water for their families. Soup kitchens are a regular ministry, and home visits by church members to church members happen on a regular basis. There are many other activities that are organized for around special needs and special events. Manuel, a church elder and an elected delegate to the city council in Santa Clara, earned my respect and admiration for the manner in which he has embraced the proposed senior daycare center that is due to open in September at the Santa Clara Church. He has been able to recruit a doctor, a teacher, and a social worker to volunteer their time. He has worked effortlessly to procure donations of food and craft materials, and he has been successful in motivating church members to each give according to their gifts of service to this project that will surely be deserving of our continued support. There is great joy in the church in Santa Clara. The men and women I met there have left a lasting impression on me, and their example of what Christian service can and perhaps should be. It has also raised questions for me about what we're doing here in Beaverton. Do our neighbors and senior shut-ins need help with their laundry? Are we providing encouragement to our shut-ins and people in need? Or do we doing all we can to help house and feed the hungry in our community? We traveled to Cuba to serve, but we came home having been served by some of the most loving, gracious, and hospitable people I have ever met. Michelle Greenwood and I will be making a recommendation to session at our next report that we create a standing committee for Cuban mission here at Southminster Church. A committee that will not only support Don, as he has been the sole leader of this effort for the last few years, but also to look for ways that we can provide continued support for the Cuban ministries and churches we have visited and the people we have met. Also to look for ways to partner with the other churches here in Portland that work with the Cuban, the Central Presbytery of Cuba. And above all, to become advocates so that our bridge to Havana can finally be opened to two-way traffic.
And Chris and Natalie and Jeffrey from the Kyberian Church.
On the first night we were in Kyberian, we met with the youth group. Edelberto told us that most of the youth had divorced parents. Out of over 20 youth, 2 lived with both parents. Because of this, most of the youth came of their own accord. They aren't forced by their parents to go to church or to the youth group. In the mornings before church, I don't usually want to go to church, but they get up early and they get ready.
So one of the days we were walking around and we were visiting members in the community that couldn't always make it to church. And we visited this older woman who was taking care of her blind husband who had cancer. She has three sons, two that still live in Cuba and one that lives here in America. And they provide her with no support of any kind, just absolutely nothing. So what the sons don't provide, the church tries and make up for by letting them participate in the food programs, clothing programs, laundry, and they have like sewing workshops, and this church even gives them money each month to help with different various expenses. And I remember this woman saying how absolutely lonely she was, but Elder Berto came with us to all these houses, and everywhere we went was making them laugh and smile, and this man really is their hope. And I remember her husband saying that he's scared to be alone and that he needs his wife. And I still see so vividly this woman in my head swearing as we're leaving that if her husband passes before she does, she will give every single day she has left of service to this church because she feels that she has been given much more than she deserves.
On the day that we spoke to the elders, they talked about everything they did for the community. Some of the things they do are they feed the elderly three times a week, they do a laundry program once a week, and they do VBS every summer. The pastor even told us that they wanted to do laundry more times each week. This got me thinking, what do I do for my community? What can I do for my community? Seeing churches work like this has inspired me to do even more. It also made me question what inspired them to do more. That's when I realized that the main role of the church wasn't a church. But it was to unite and serve the community.
So Sophia, Isabel, Evan, and Carter will share about their Placidas church experience.
So we spent 3 days in Placidas, which is a pretty small and quiet town. It has a population of about 70,000 people, and that includes the little villages that surround the main town. And when we were there, one thing that I noticed was there's a lot of kids and there's a lot of youth, but it seems like the majority of the population is kind of an older generation. And I was talking to our translator, Pedro, about it. He was kind of addressing us as a group one time, and he was telling us how a lot of times in Cuba, children aren't really an option for a lot of people. I know here in the US, usually having a baby is a blessing and it's seen as kind of the celebration, but in Cuba, it's almost like having a child is just another mouth to feed. And he said that personally, he wouldn't even consider having children at that point in his life because he barely makes enough money to pay for his own bills and feed himself, and he can't even imagine bringing someone else into the world that he would have to take care of. And it was just really heartbreaking to hear about how even if people wanted to start a family, it's not really an option in a lot of cases. And then when they do start a family, they have to work really hard to kind of make ends meet and make a living for themselves. We spent one day out on the villages and we saw this iron factory next to one of the houses. And there were, I think, 10 or 12 men working at this factory. And what they did basically was they found scrap metal around in the town and they would melt it down and then mold it into different kinds of furniture and stuff. And they would sell that, and that was how they made their living. And I was talking to the woman who owned the house next door, and she said that they were out there working all day, every day, in order to get as much money as they could. Most of them had families that they had to support and stuff like that. And just seeing how resourceful and how driven these people had to be in order to provide for their families was just really like eye-opening, and it made me kind of take away from that to not take anything for granted that I have here and to realize that there are people who are a lot worse off than me.
So one of the big things that I found amazing about the church community in Placidas was not just the church, but the church building itself. In 1980-ish, the community decided that they wanted to rebuild, reconstruct, whatever, their church. But around that same time, the government really shut down on everything. So they couldn't get the materials and they couldn't hire the work to the labor to do it, so, and they had to go through the government to do it, and the government basically stole what few materials they had gathered together to do the project. Within 20 years of their rebuilding, the church had crumbled to the ground. It's been 12 years since that crumble, and just recently, 3 years ago, they decided to try again and to rebuild the church. And they've come a really long way. It's a beautiful building, and hopefully it'll be done by the next time we get to Cuba. But seeing the community in, they've been having service in this little apartment across the street from where the church is, and it's not big enough for their community. It can barely hold what active members they have. And just seeing those people pull together and want to expand the community was really powerful.
So our second night in Placetas, we got to join the youth group at this farm, which was really pretty and was like mostly devoted to like flowers and looking nice. And that's where they held their youth groups often. And as we saw, a lot of Cuban culture is dancing. And so that's what we did. But before we started dancing, we got to this circle and we introduced ourselves and we said what we were thankful for. And it occurred to me that the circle was almost split in half, like Southminster youth and Cuban youth. And also just kind of like a barrier. And part of that, I think, was language. It was hard for us to like introduce and like talk to each other. But later, some like Taylor Swift started playing. And so we all knew the song. We all started dancing. And like we all kind of connected. Like they would play a song and they'd show us how they danced to it. Then we'd play American song, and then we would show them how we would dance to it. And we're all dancing together, and it was like a really interesting way for us to connect, and it was really unique. It just shows you can connect in ways you didn't expect.
One of the common themes that the youth have been talking about, both in Cuba when we were discussing, and here I think some of the past groups, is that the sense of community in Cuba is so incredibly strong, something that we don't necessarily see here stateside with our churches and the community that surrounds the church. In Placetas, we got to see two prayer houses. They have two, three, maybe four prayer houses sprinkled throughout the city. And it's these prayer houses that allow the church to directly interact with the community. And unlike here in the States, where we have youth from Portland, Hillsborough, Tigard, Beaverton, all over the place, the churches were attended by pretty much everyone that lived directly around the church. And that allowed them to be incredibly strong. Sorry, I'm not holding this mic right. It allowed them to really know each other and to interact and know how to help people and what kind of help people needed. And one of the prayer houses we visited had a 10-year-old girl that spends more time in the prayer house than she does at home. That might speak due to issues she has at home, but it also speaks to the amount of care that the prayer houses offer to anyone in the community. She's, even though she doesn't prescribe to the Presbyterian religion that prayer house was, it's just they're open to everyone, no matter what situation you have, no matter what you need. The community is just impeccable.
And this last group could not decide who would do the sharing, so I think they're all here. Michelle, Eric, Chalk Daisy, Drew, and Fia will talk about their experience in Kamawani. And Kelvin.
Our group stayed in Kamawani, a small town that you could easily walk from one end to another. The church was centrally located in the town and then across the street from the cigar factory, which employed more than 200 people. This church had an energy and a purpose. They had programs to take care of every generation, nurturing their mental, physical, and spiritual selves, including, among other things, art classes, exercise programs, and food services.
So one of the big things about Kamawani that surprised me was that it was very comparable to American standards. I was going in there having expectations from other places we'd stayed in Cuba, like Havana. I was thinking that the buildings might not be perfectly structured or something like that. But when we got there, It was very nice. Everybody was very welcoming. We had air conditioning, which I wasn't expecting. Very comfortable beds. Lots of food to eat at every meal. And it just gave me a whole lot more knowledge about Cuba and what to expect and how it's evolved and just evolved from what people had expected of it.
So pure drinking water is a major problem throughout all of Cuba, and some people have limited supply of water and are challenged to get water to the sick and elderly and to themselves. And I was very astonished when Kemperuani had a water system there. And it's one of the three of the central province of Cuba. And the church welcomes the community in to get the water, but they have, but are limited by the amount of water they receive from the town. But they can only provide water for about 18 families living in the area. And I was very inspired by how much they opened up their hearts and how small of a community they are, but they still are very welcoming and very selfless. And like how much they bring everyone together and how blessed they are and how blessed I am at home.
So one of the programs that the church provides to the community would be the laundry program. And so what the laundry program does is that the church, once a week in the mornings, they would provide laundry machines for the people of the community to come in to wash their clothes and to hang their clothes around the church grounds to dry. So I got to participate in this program, and it was really remarkable seeing all the people that from the community that came in and washed their clothes. And it was also remarkable seeing all the clothes that were hung on the church grounds that day.
So a few other people have been talking about community, and I kind of have a special thing that happened to me. It was my birthday in Cuba, and I turned 14. But the day prior to that, where the rest of the group met the youth, I was actually sick, so I didn't get to meet them. And even though the youth and the rest of the church didn't really know me, they threw a really cool party where they got pizza and ice cream and cake, and they pulled a youth group together, and we played a few games after that. It was really cool.
So that is a great intro into what really struck me and inspired me from my time in Kamahawani, is the youth group there and how powerful and how connected they are. To give this stranger that they'd never seen before this amazing birthday party with pizza and ice cream, which is not easy to come by in Cuba. And it was just crazy to see and how much they just welcomed us in to whatever they were doing. They already had a pretty strong built community, and they welcomed us with open arms. And I want to take that same sort of philosophy and try to mold that into our youth group here at Southminster.
For the people of Cuba who've been through so much and been faced with so many challenges, their spirits do not break. The communities of people play a crucial role in keeping the compassion, the support, the utter respect intact and flowing through these people. There are people surrounding you, just being there, makes the world feel not as lonely, as desolate, as bereft of hope and life. Having people there to help you laugh and cry and live is knowing you're not alone. The churches in these communities are central unifiers. There are people go, come from, and find opportunities to live on. And you see this in the everyday smiles of people. So during our visits with the elders, they offered up some key advice. It's this idea that you need to stay genuine and stay humble. To be humble does not mean to be afraid to know your gifts. But to be humble is not to be selfless or without self, but rather the understanding and connectedness with the self to know one's own strengths without letting our strengths blind us from recognizing the gifts of other people. The church provides an environment for the abilities of its people to flourish. Overall, community is not something which can be taught in a textbook. It is an experience inherent in humanity and a necessity. The concept of community is hard to articulate and describe, for it is not read off a page or instructed, but felt. You know it when you know. You know it in the sacrifice. You know it in the memories shared, in the people met, and the relationships fostered. Our time in Cuba, I think, enlightened all of us. And as John said in our paper, it disturbed us. It showed us how a group of people whom have gone through so much can come together and just be there for each other. It's a hard thing to articulate. We've all felt community, and we all know community. But just taking community and putting it into action and having it here, something I think all of us have been blessed to know in Cuba and now can do here. So thank you.
Pastor Alberto, after we all came back together for a debrief time, he really guided us through a reflection time and just said some incredibly powerful and uplifting things. I put one of the quotes that he shared with us in the bulletin. He said, "The power of the church is not in numbers, but in its experience and passion for change."